This is 89.1 WEMU, and welcome to Issues of the Environment. I'm David Fair, and today we want to talk butterflies with you, specifically monarch butterflies. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is in the process of determining whether the monarch should be added to the endangered species list. The monarch population has been in steady decline over the past 30 years. However, recently there was some good news reported. My guest this morning is David Klippner, and David is the Director of Education and Wildlife at the Lesley Science and Nature Center, and thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
With all of the talk of the decline, the most recent examination of overwintering monarch populations was put at its highest level any time in the past 12 years. To what might we attribute that kind of increase in numbers?
I guess what I would hope is that people are getting more involved. I think that whenever people ask me about how monarchs are doing, it's usually kind of a two-part answer. The first has to do with anecdotal information where I say, man, I'm seeing a lot more monarchs, and a lot of people are telling me that they're seeing more monarchs. I think that the biggest factor that scientists, at least, and biologists are looking at is they're looking at those overwintering sites you mentioned, because those are going to determine what next year's crop is going to look like, basically. How many monarchs are going to be able to come back and repopulate those areas.
How on earth is it possible to actually get a handle on population? I mean, it would imagine to me that it's near impossible to count individually.
Right. Well, monarchs have this really unique, they have a two-way migration system, sort of like what we think about with birds, where they have very specific overwintering sites. One's in the south, South California, and then the other one's in Mexico. So they're able to go to these very specific sites in these forests, these fir trees, and get a rough count about how many monarchs are actually hanging out in these overwintering sites, and that gives them an idea. But the trick and the reason they're focusing on that is because, you know, we might see a lot of monarchs here, and I'm saying that this year we actually kind of are. I'm seeing a lot more monarchs here in Michigan, but it doesn't mean that all of them are going to make it back to those overwintering sites. So it's way more important that we count those ones at the overwintering sites to help determine those population dynamics.
So one of the ways that you kind of track if they're making it or not is we have a great number of volunteers and people who are out working to tag monarchs. How on earth do you tag a monarch?
At Lesley Science and Nature Center and other facilities, we usually have some sort of event to help educate people on how to do that. We have our Monarch Migration Festival in September coming up, where we get hundreds of monarchs and people come in and they learn exactly how to tag them. It's just a really little sticker that goes on the wing. It's shocking to me even still that works, but they stay on there and that it doesn't affect their flight enough that they are able to still make their journeys and live their life. Put a little sticker on there and it's got little tiny numbers, and then they read them and they find them not just at the overwintering sites to determine where they came from, but also all along the way. You know, not every single butterfly is going to be able to make that journey.
Is it then a myth that if you touch the wings of a butterfly, it will die?
It won't die, but here's the reason we don't want to touch butterflies' wings is because there's little tiny scales all over those wings that help give it its substance so that it can fly, all those colors we see. And those little scales are very fragile, and they'll come off if you touch them. So you have to be very, very careful and minimize how much impact that you're having on the butterfly wings when you're putting those stickers on there.
Do we know why there was such a precipitous decline in the population over the past three decades?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we point our fingers to is going to be the loss of habitat. You know, I'm really hesitant to ever claim that any animal is doing well when the numbers are down like that. I mean, when we talk about the numbers being down, since the 80s, they're down 97%. We went from, you know, like a billion monarchs at these overwintering sites to somewhere around 93 million, which sounds like a lot, but that's dangerous to talk about that, right? Because then we start thinking, wow, there's tons of them because there's millions. But really, you know, we start thinking about an animal being common. And in order to keep those animals common, we have to make sure that we provide their habitats. I've stopped using the terms endangered species as much and really pushing that agenda and started trying to teach, especially our youth, about endangered habitats, because that's really what it's all about.
Issues of the Environment continues on 89.1 WEMU, and we're talking monarch butterflies with David Klippner from the Lesley Science and Nature Center. All along the way, through the mass migration that we see with monarchs, they are pollinating, and it's vital to our agriculture. Where in our ecology do the monarchs make a difference?
As an educator, I really think that their biggest impact is as a flagship species. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of animals out there we can talk about when we're trying to establish these habitats. Again, I mentioned that a lot of animals are using them, not just monarchs, but there's such a bright, colorful orange butterfly, and everyone recognizes them. But so because of that, we're able to sort of use them as a hook to teach people about these habitats. You know, everyone loves to see them, and they're just so iconic that they're really doing an important job as conservation biologists themselves by trying to get people in the door to talk about these these pollinator gardens and planting native wildflowers, if we didn't have species like monarch butterflies, then people wouldn't be interested enough in preserving these habitats.
So what are the potential ramifications should one day we get to a point where monarchs are near or fully extinct?
It's a really good question, because when people ask me, I was like, well, you know, who cares? You know, like, what happens if all those butterflies are gone? Is it a big deal? You know, as pollinators, they have a job, but I think it's really about the indication that the habitats would obviously be suffering if you don't see that animal. So it's more of an indicator that those populations are disappearing and declining, and really less about that individual animal disappearing. Because if we're not seeing monarchs, it means that we don't have enough monarch habitats, which means we don't have enough pollinator habitats for all of the other pollinators and all the other wildlife that are using them. So I really try to focus that energy on, hey, you can protect that monarch and also a slew of other wildlife if you just plant some milkweed plants and some really pretty flowers in your yard. It doesn't even take a whole lot of space. I mean, we're talking about, you know, just a couple of flowers, and I've seen people in the community tell me, hey, I just planted one milkweed plant and a couple flowers, and I see monarchs in my yard.
And I think that's such a strong point, because there is a role for all of us to play as individuals around our homes, our businesses, and in our communities. And we see the ramifications of failure to do so in adequate numbers. So, as I mentioned, the Leslie Science and Nature Center is active in supporting the monarchs in our region. And you mentioned that coming up September 8th, the center will hold its annual Monarch Migration Festival. So what exactly takes place at the festival?
It's a true festival in terms of what we're going to do is we'll have face painting and all the other fun activities and games that you would think would be at a festival. But we also encourage people to purchase plants to take home with them to plant in their yards and teach them how to set up monarch way stations through Monarch Watch. Their website is a really valuable resource for conservation biologists to be able to point people to, because they have basically a citizen scientist program where you can get your yard certified as a monarch way station for these animals. And I think that what you're going to walk away with at a festival like this or others that occur is the information in order to, and the confidence to be able to go home and actually do conservation biology in your yard, which is pretty great. And then also people get to release tagged butterflies. That's part of the mission, is you get to actually get a live butterfly with a little tag on there. You learn how it's tagged and learn all about it, and you get to release them. We'll have other species there that you can go into a butterfly house. It's just really a celebration of the animal and of those habitats that they thrive in.
And it's not only taking place at the Leslie Science Center and Nature Center. There are these kinds of events all across the country. How important is that as a component to the awareness and education about the protection of monarchs?
You're kind of, you know, hitting the nail on the head that this can't stop at just having local events where there actually are a lot of nice habitats. I think there are some pretty good habitats here in Michigan, but we need to work our way down with these efforts down into areas in the Corn Belt where we can, you know, promote plantings of milkweed so that that migration path, those monarchs have a place to stay and stop on the way down, and they have wildflowers to drink the nectar so that they can make it down to those overwintering sites. And it's my hope that as we grow this program, we'll be able to help facilitate some of those plantings by, you know, providing plants and getting resources and funding to help get more of those little stopping points for those monarchs that are working their way down south and on the way back up.
I'm going to ask you a completely unfair question and ask you to pull out your crystal ball, but based on all you know today, are you confident in the future of monarch butterflies?
Confident about the butterflies. I think that there's potential for us to at least maintain, to actually recruit and get all the way back up to where there's a billion monarchs again. We might not see a get back up to those numbers based on the demands that we have for our population, but if we can convince enough of the farmers and the owners on down in the Corn Belt to get a little bit more wildflowers planted down there for them to make it back and forth, we can start stabilizing these numbers. Initiatives like the Endangered Species Act are going to help that, because it raises awareness and helps us protect those habitats. And that's really what it's about. When we say we're protecting endangered species, we're protecting their homes and protecting their habitats. And that's going to go a long way. So if that actually happens, I could see some pretty amazing numbers start to occur.
David, thank you so much for the time and for your insights today. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Always a good time.
This is Issues of the Environment. It's produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner and heard every Wednesday on 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti. I'm David Fair.